question number one is, what is bhakti as per traditional Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas? And number two, is bhakti to Sri Krishna means renunciation? Which isn't very good English, but I think you can understand that. Number three, kindly give me shastric references for Q1 and Q2 question mark. What is bhakti as per traditional Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas? Good question, because bhakti is one of those words which people use, at least in India, now in the West also. It's a word which comes in every language except, every Indian language except maybe Urdu. What's the word in Urdu for bhakti? There must be some word. Does anyone know? No, we don't have any Urdu speakers here. There must be some word, because there's also some conception of bhakti. In fact, in Pakistan, so I'm told, the main practice of, or the most popular practice of Islam is Sufi style, which means singing these ghazals and devotional songs. But what we might call orthodox or more hardcore Muslims, they don't approve of that. But it's... so they must have some... anyway, in every language. I don't know Telugu, but I'm sure the word comes in Telugu also, isn't it? Bhakti. And in Tamil it's bhakti, something like that. They pronounce the K as a G. So it's a word that's commonly used, but people don't really think very much about what it means. And there are many words like this, like Bhagawan. It's a word also that's commonly used, but people don't know what it means. Just here in Andhra Pradesh, there's someone who's known as Bhagawan, who's just died or is in the process of dying. He was in a wheelchair for several years, and then... is he dead yet? We're not sure. He's dead or soon to die. So people call him Bhagawan. But we learn from Shastra that Bhagawan never grows old. Bhagawan never dies. Bhagawan never goes in a wheelchair. But people call him Bhagawan, this person who's about to die. So it's important to know the proper meaning of the word. There are many misused words. There are so many, like dharma. Now, you see, people speak of Hindu dharma, Christian dharma. But in Shastra, this is not the meaning of the word dharma, some kind of sectarian faith. The words are getting misused. Guru is another word. Anyone who calls himself a guru and manages to get some followers, they become a guru. But the real meaning of a guru is something quite different. So anyway, let's talk today about bhakti. What is bhakti as per traditional Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas? Actually, traditional Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, they don't make a definition. They give the shastric definition. The person who's asked this question, Balaji Venkataraman, has asked for shastric references. Well, there must be shastric references. Because the acharya means achinoti yashastrani, one who acts according to shastra. Acharya means completely based on shastra. So what is the meaning of bhakti? Well, there are various definitions given. So they're not contradictory, but they, from different perspectives, you could say. Just like you could describe one entity in slightly different ways. They're not contradictory, but they're different perspectives or giving more emphasis on certain aspects. Just like you can define a cow as an animal. That's a definition. More specific is a large female mammal. Then more specific is an animal who is domesticated for milk, for taking the milk. That's a commercial way of looking. Then from a Shastric point of view, she's one of the mothers. Dhenu. Dhenu dhatri tatha prithvi saptaita matara smritaha. She's one of the seven mothers. So these, there are various definitions of in Shastra. They're not contradictory, but they emphasize different aspects. So the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we've been asked about traditional Gauriya Vaishnava Acharyas. Well, the original Gauriya Vaishnava Acharya, from whom all, or to whom all other acharyas have to pay deference. If anyone in the Gauriya Vaishnava, if anyone is a Gauriya Vaishnava, they must follow Rupa Goswami. He is the original Gauriya Vaishnava Acharya, deputed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he has composed one book called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is an analysis of bhakti, and particularly of bhakti rasa, with reference to all shastras. It is a unique work in the field of bhakti. We don't find in other sampradayas such a work as this. Now the concept of, now I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but the concept of rasa is already there in Shastra, in Natya Shastra, which means the Shastra describing dance and drama. So it's already there, but that's considered to be something somewhat mundane. But Rupa Goswami has shown how the original Ras is completely spiritual in relationship to Krishna, who is called, in Rupa Goswami's words, Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He's the very form of all nectarian rasa. Or in brief, as stated in Shruti, Raso Vayasaha, he is rasa. The supreme truth is rasa. And rasa is not very easy to translate into English, because there's no such concept in English of any such understanding. So, to describe what is bhakti rasa, then Rupa Goswami first of all describes what is bhakti. So, first of all, he quotes from the Narada Pancharatra. Sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. We can turn these lights off, there's no reason to have these lights on. Just wasting energy and money and polluting the world some more. This definition is given by, taken from the Narada Pancharatra, which is a work on bhakti by Narada Muni, who is the original propagator of bhakti within the universe. That's what he does. That's Narada's whole existence, is propagating bhakti. He is the very personage of bhakti shakti. He's imbued with the power to infuse bhakti. So his definition is that being completely freed from all mundane designations, sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam, being absorbed in that completely pure spiritual essence. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam. To engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses, Bhakti Ruchyate. That is called Bhakti. Now to understand the meaning of this verse requires some background knowledge. What does it mean? Sarvopadhivinirmuktam, to be free from all mundane designations. And then we have to come back to Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna, Bhagavan, teaches us that we are not the body. The body that we presently inhabit is temporary. Therefore, any designations in relation to the body, this is actually, Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita that we are not the body, that the designations in relation to the body are therefore meaningless, is discussed in more detail in Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly in the conversation between Jarabharat and Maharaj Rahugana, particularly in that section. But this name Hrishikesh, this comes in Bhagavad Gita. Tamuvacha Hrishikesha. Yes. Having said to Hrishi, Arjuna spoke to Hrishikesha. So Hrishikesha is a name for Krishna. That's clear. It means the master of the senses. So this is one definition of bhakti. That being freed from all mundane designations, such as I am Indian, I am from Telangana, we don't like those people from Rayalaseema. That's going on now, this whole anti-Andhra movement. We are educated, these people are not educated. Or we're from this caste and they're from another caste. There are so many divisions. In the West it's quite prominent, they've divided even men against women. Or more precisely, women against men. There's this female power, power to the women, empower the women, all this kind of thing. Put down the men and raise up the women. So like this, there are so many, when we make designations, we divide each other. And then our material identification becomes stronger and we forget Krishna. Make a point of that. When we make designations, then we become more and more divided against each other. That goes with the Bhagavad Gita verse in which Krishna describes jnana, rajasic jnana, in which one emphasizes differences. So to engage all the senses in the service of the master of the senses, that is bhakti. That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam with the practical example of Ambarish Maharaj. What are the senses in the Western way of thinking? The senses means the senses of seeing, touching, smelling, feeling, hearing, tasting. But in the Vedic understanding, these are called the Gyanendriyas, the senses which through experiences they attain information about the world. And in the Vedic understanding, they are also Karmendriyas, the organs of action, which means the hands for working, the feet for walking, the tongue, which is also a Gyanendriya by tasting, is also a Karmendriya by speaking, And then there is the rectum, obviously for passing stool, and the genital for discharging urine and semen. So all these, and then the center of the senses is the mind. So when all these senses are engaged in the service of Krishna, that is called bhakti. The example is there of Ambarish Maharaj. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayoho. First of all, his mind was placed at the lotus feet of Krishna. Vachansi Vaikuntha Gunarnu Vanane. And his speaking propensity was engaged to glorify Krishna. Karohare Mandira Marjana Dishu. And the hand is used to turn off the cell phone, please. Use your hand to turn off your cell phone. Ambarish Maharaj was using his hand to clean the temple and other such marjanadishu, not only cleaning the temple, but other such services. We hear about Ramanujacharya, who's not a Gauriya Acharya, but in Gauriyas they worship all the Acharyas. So he, when he was living at Sri Rangam, he would daily bring water from the Kaveri to the temple for bathing the Lord. So we may say, well, why should he do? He's from a Brahmin family. Why should he do that? Carrying water, there's a caste in traditional Vedic society. There's a caste of water bearers. It's physical work. Shudras, they bring water. But in the service of the Lord, a devotee does everything. So Ramanuja, he was daily carrying water. It's about a kilometer at the present time. I don't know at that time how far the Kaveri was from the temple. It's quite a long way. Because the bank of the course of the river shifts. So he was carrying water personally. So he may think, well, that's a Shudra's job. But no, a devotee will perform all services for Krishna. This is describing Maharaj Ambarish. He was a king. So he was personally cleaning the temple. And we may say, well, why should a king do that? He can engage any number of people to do cleaning. But he wanted to do because he wanted to show himself as a servant of Krishna. He may be a big king, but he thinks of himself as a servant of Krishna. In this connection, there's a very nice story, an actual incident which took place concerning this Maharaj Prataparudra, who features in Chaitanya Leela. He was the king of Orissa when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was residing in Puri. So, you know, in those days that the marriages between the royal families, it was not just getting married, but it was a political consideration also. Because if you give your daughter to another king, then that's a sign that you're friends with them. So the Maharaj of Vijayanagara, that was Krishna Deva Rai actually. He was Purushottam Deva at that time. In this story, was Purushottam Dev, but he was also fighting with Krishna Deva Rai. Not in this story, different one. But he was also fighting with Krishna Deva Rai. This story, it is in particular. Okay. But yeah, so he was all these Vaishnava kings. They were fighting with each other. Interesting, because he was also fighting at a different time with Krishna Deva Rai, who is Telugu, I believe, right? Although he's in what's now called Karnataka. So we're told he's Purushottam Deva of Kanchi. Purushottam Dev before Prataparudra. It wasn't Prataparudra. All right, you're correcting me. Thank you. Anyway, the moral of the story is very sweet. You're from Puri Dham. All right. So you know all these stories. Okay. So the story is there that... Yeah, so the king of Kanchi, they had kings there. That would be what? What is that? Chola or? Chola king in North Tamil Nadu. So there was some idea to give his daughter to the king of Orissa, whose capital at that time was Cuttack, I believe. Is that correct? The Orissa kings had their capital at Cuttack. So he came, and at that time, this king from Kanchi came to Puri. He was invited, and he saw in Puri that the king of Orissa was sweeping the road, because that is the tradition. Even today in Puri, at the time of Rathiyatra, the king, although he's not really a king in the true sense of the word, but he will sweep the road before Jagannath. Now, a king doesn't sweep roads. That's for the very low caste people. They have the job of sweeping roads. So, when the king of Kanchi saw this, he said, what's this? In this Orissa, the king, they sweep the road. I'm not going to give my daughter to a road sweeper. So he left, and he gave the message, I'm not going to give my daughter to any road sweeper. Now, of course, the king of Orissa, he was doing that to show that even though he's the king and everyone is respecting him, he is the king on behalf of Jagannath, Krishna. He doesn't think that I'm independently powerful. He thinks that I'm a servant of Krishna. This is the proper attitude. This is bhakti. So, when he got this message, this Purushottam Dev, not Prataparudra, so I'm told, he became very angry and he attacked Kanchi. He attacked the Chola kingdom and by force he took the daughter. But he didn't marry her. Because he felt so insulted by this king, he told his chief minister that you take this girl, this princess, and you marry her to some sweeper. You find some sweeper. You find the best sweeper. The best, and you marry her to some sweeper. So the girl was, you know, very upset and this and that. But meanwhile, the minister was thinking that this is not good. First of all, this girl's life is going to be spoiled. Another thing is, if we marry her to a sweeper, then there'll be eternal enmity between our two kingdoms. They were going to get married to make friendship. Now there'll be enmity instead. So he just kept her. He kept her in his house or whatever and said, all right, you just stay there. So, and then the king was very angry like this. But you know, anger... In the heart of a good person, they may sometimes get angry, but after some time it dies down. In the heart of a bad person, then the anger is just going on all the time. It doesn't stop. So anyway, he came again for the time of the Rathiyatra, and again the king was sweeping the street. And then the minister proposed that, you see, I looked in all the kingdom, and I couldn't find any sweeper better than you, so you better marry her. And then he agreed, and then it was all right. So, bhakti means to engage our senses in the service of Krishna. All these senses should be engaged. So that example is given of Ambarish Maharaj. Even though he was a great king, he used all his senses in the service of Krishna. There are many great kings in history that who would... The Bhagavatam is simply mostly narrations of great kings who are servants, but it's not, it's for everyone. Hanuman is from the monkey species. He was also serving Krishna. So bhakti means to engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses. That is the meaning of bhakti. And from that comes rasa. Why should a king or carry water or sweep the road? Why should he do that? He won't do that for anyone else. Normally, but he'll do it for Jagannath. He'll do it for Krishna. Why will he do that? Because there's a feeling that in doing so, that he feels very happy to serve the Lord, and by doing so, a devotee feels great happiness in doing so. So that's one definition of bhakti. Then there are many others. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find actually in the definition of dharma, param dharma, what is the supreme dharma? Bhakti is defined. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is dharma projhita kaitava atra. Cheating dharma is rejected herein, in Bhagavatam. And that cheating dharma, according to the Vaishnava Acharyas, Gaurya Vaishnava Acharyas, is dharma, artha, kama and moksha. In other words, ordinary worldly dharma, monetary considerations, sense gratification, and liberation from material existence. This is called, collectively, these four are called Kaitava Dharma or cheating Dharma, and that's all the Vedic literatures apparently deal with. But that is rejected in Srimad Bhagavatam. And there the definition is given of what is the supreme Dharma. Savai pungsang paro dharma yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma supraseedati. The supreme occupation, Srila Prabhupada here translates dharma as occupation, because everyone has to do something all the time. Nahi kaschik kshanamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit. Everyone has to do something all the time. So this supreme occupation for all living beings, it's not only for Indians or Hindus or Brahmanas, for everyone, savai pungsang parod, is that by which there is bhakti to adhokshaja. Adhokshaja is another name of Krishna. Which means, he who is not perceivable to the mundane senses. Now this is a very important point, because there just one definition was given, that bhakti means to engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses. But adhokshaja means he who is not perceivable to the mundane senses. So how are we going to serve him? We can't see him, we can't touch him, we can't smell him, we can't feel him, we can't taste him by mundane senses. So how are we going to connect with him at all? So these are big questions. Parikshit Maharaj asked that question. How can we... The Vedic subject matter is transcendental, but the sense of hearing is mundane. So how can we hear it? And in brief, the answer is by His mercy. By His mercy, that's all. We cannot actually see, hear, touch, smell, taste, feel Krishna in our materially conditioned state. We don't have pratyaksha bhagavan dharmyam. We don't have direct experience of Krishna. But by His mercy, we can begin to do so. By His mercy, He reveals Himself to us according to our degree of surrender to Him. So, Krishna is beyond the realm of mundane introspection. That is the terminology Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has used. Mundane perception, we can say. So, bhakti is here defined as ahaituki apratihata. That without any personal motivation. And real bhakti is that which does not stop or become changed under any circumstances. So apratihata means unstoppable. So this word we can understand in relation to bhakti in one way means that we're all the time engaged in bhakti. Not that I go to the temple once a day and the rest of the day I forget Krishna. But at least once a day I remember Krishna. But apratihata means all the time. Another meaning of apratihata is that there are no circumstances on which that bhakti will change or be stopped. That means that I'm doing bhakti and then I lost all my money, I got in an accident, people started to call me bad names. There must be something wrong with bhakti because I'm getting a bad result. But real bhakti is not like that. Real bhakti is marobi. What is that? Marobi rakobi. Jo iccha toha. Whatever, you can kill me or protect me. Nija dasa prati tua adhika. You kill me or protect me, whatever, but I am your servant, you have the right to do with me whatever you like. That is real bhakti. So under any circumstances, one's attitude of bhakti doesn't change. One will always remain fully dedicated to Krishna, whatever happens. Even if Krishna treats us apparently badly, we don't change. We'll stay the same. So, ahaituki apratihata yayatma supersedati. And this alone will give full satisfaction to the self. So this is another definition of bhakti. And Rupa Goswami has combined these definitions. He's brought together these different statements about bhakti and given the definitive understanding of what is uttama bhakti. The topmost bhakti. Because bhakti, there may be some element of bhakti. Even if someone is, so many people, they're going to Tirumala and praying to Balaji, let me pass my exam, let my business flourish. So there's some element of bhakti. There's some faith in Krishna, some feeling for Krishna, but it's more what can I get from Krishna. But still there's some element of bhakti. But what is the real level of bhakti? Rupa Goswami has defined anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kamadhyana vritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti ruttama. The bhakti that is performed without expectation or cultivation of the desire for any personal gain. Either on the gross level, I will get a house, I will get a job. It's a funny thing, people pray for a job. Why should you pray to be someone's servant? Except Krishna's servant. People are so condemned. You'd think you'd pray to become the boss, but they're praying to get a job. It's a funny prayer. Men, it's very common though. So, also to be free of the desire for liberation. And to always perform bhakti in a manner that is favorable or pleasing to Krishna. This is called topmost bhakti. Now, as for the question, is bhakti the same as renunciation? Not exactly. One can renounce the world without having bhakti. But if one has bhakti, then renunciation automatically comes. But that renunciation without bhakti, it's not very meaningful. That's called falgu vairagya, or very light or not meaningful vairagya. Prapancha kataya buddhya hari sambandha vastuni. Mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam falgum kathyate. This is Rupa Goswami's verse. He says that the renunciation of items of this world by people who desire liberation from it, who do not see the relation of everything in this world with Krishna, that renunciation is called falgu vairagya, or meaningless renunciation. It's meaningless because everything in this world is meant to be used for Krishna. So if we say we renounce it, that's not spiritual. If I say that, well, this microphone is material, so I won't use it. But then you won't hear me. And then the hearing about Krishna, which is part of bhakti, you won't hear. I'll be supposedly more spiritual, but there won't be any benefit to anyone. Or another perspective, if you say, well, I'm renouncing, but if we understand properly, we don't own anything anyway. If you walk into the bank and you make a big announcement, ladies and gentlemen, all the money in this bank, from here on, I renounce it all. But you don't own it anyway, so how can you renounce it? So if you think, this is my property, I will renounce it. It's not a proper understanding. The Jain sadhu, sometimes in Gujarat, the very rich Jain merchant, they may become a sadhu. And when they become a sadhu, they go in the street on a rut and they throw jewels in the street. They distribute expensive jewels in the street to show, now we are renounced. Anyone can take it. But that's not real renunciation because it doesn't really belong to us. Everything belongs to Krishna. So the proper thing to do if you're a Jain jeweler and you want to renounce all your jewels is to use them in the service of Krishna. Use the money in the service of Krishna. So that is real renunciation. That is described by Rupa Goswami also. Anasaktasya vishayan yathaham upayanjataha nirbandha Krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchyate. That when one sees everything in relation to Krishna and uses it without being personally attached to it for sense gratification, that is called proper renunciation. So a devotee of Krishna can have millions of dollars, or you can give millions of dollars, but he won't keep it. He'll immediately use it for Krishna's service, not building up a big bank account for himself. But use immediately. Bring the money, use. Build the temple, distribute prasadam, hold the festival, print books. Use the money in Krishna's service. And immediately, if you give $1 million to a devotee of Krishna, immediately again he'll be a poor man. Because you won't keep. Use it all for Krishna. So, renunciation and bhakti, not exactly the same thing, but that automatically comes, renunciation of the world, because if we're attached to serving Krishna, then we're not attached to trying to enjoy this world. Therefore, one of the definitions of bhakti given in the Srimad Bhagavatam is bhakti pareshanubhavo viraktir anyatra. Bhakti means to have direct experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to be unattached to everything else. Automatically. If one is attached to Krishna, then why should we be attached on our own account to anything else? We may be attached, but not on our own account. For instance, we're not recommending that anyone does it, but just to give an example, if someone was to pick this up and exit this recorder and drop it on the floor, I would become upset, I would imagine. Why should I become upset? It's my recorder, but that is meant for recording lectures about Krishna. So it's being used in Krishna's service. So why should we misuse that? Why should we misuse anything? Just like the lights were on here, I told to turn them off. Why should I care? Someone else is paying the electricity bill. Why should I care? But it's all Krishna's energy. Why should it be wasted? So this seeing everything in relation to Krishna, we become automatically detached from everything else. So bhakti, within that renunciation, is automatically included. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojitaha janyatyashu vairagyam jnanam chayadahaitukam. One who performs bhakti to Vasudeva, Krishna, then automatically vairagya, which actually renunciation, vairagya means detachment. It's a little different from renunciation. It's not exactly the same word. The result, detachment is a mental attitude and renunciation is an actual doing something. So, and knowledge, they automatically come. So, bhakti is generally translated as devotion or love. People generally think of it like that, but it's more specific. So the general principles are given in Shastra, and then we find particularly in Srimad Bhagavatam and Ramayana, examples of how bhakti is practiced by different devotees. And we see that in the lives of the acharyas. Srila Prabhupada said that even if we don't think of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if we simply study how he is serving Krishna, then we can understand what is the ideal for a devotee. He was acting as an acharya. So through what is bhakti, there are theoretical definitions, not theoretical, but there are, you could say, textbook definitions, which are given in Shastra. And what are the actual definitions that we can see from the lives of the acharyas? One of my godbrothers, Harishauri Prabhu, he served Srila Prabhupada as a personal servant for about 2.5 years. And his realization was that being with Srila Prabhupada, it was like living the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srila Prabhupada, his whole personality and activities, they were exactly in line with the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada was the living Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam describes about the principles of bhakti. and describes the great devotees who have performed bhakti. And practically Srila Prabhupada was living that. Eka bhagavata baro bhagavata shastra. Ar bhagavat bhakta bhakti rasa patra. This verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita states that there are two bhagavatas. Bhagavata means that which is in relation to Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So among them, one is bigger, that is called the Bhagavata Shastra, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there is one more, which is the devotee, who is the receptacle, or who actually has Bhakti Rasa. Now, so it says the Bhagavata Shastra is greater, because that is definitive. The bhakta acts according to the Bhagavata. But Srila Prabhupada would always say that among the two, the person Bhagavata is more important than the book Bhagavata. And one of my godbrothers, Sarva Bhavana Prabhu, asked Prabhupada, why do you say that the person Bhagavata is greater than the book Bhagavata? Prabhupada said, because he can pull your ear. You can read the book and say, that's very nice. But the person Bhagavat will not say, you are very nice. He will put you in order. So anyway, this is a great topic. What is bhakti? I've discussed it to some extent. And I'll stop there unless anyone has any question about this. So they are what? Without practicing bhakti, those who show themselves as renunciates. Well, that's already, I spoke on that. That Falgu Vairagya, Vairagya without bhakti.
What would be their destination?
What is their destination? Well, there may be different outlooks, but wherever it is, it's within the material world. Or they may get liberation of sorts, but they won't get Krishna. So destination, there are so many. There are at least 8,400,000. Why are you so anxious to know exactly where they go? It's without Krishna, everything is useless. So exactly, you know, do you go to bathroom, do you go to the toilet number one or toilet number two? What difference does it make? It's, what do you want to go there for? It's inauspicious, whatever it is. Without Krishna bhakti, everything is useless. What is that? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says about the persons who... You can look that up. Stavara is one word. Stavara. S-T-H-A-V-A-R-A. That's one word. And another word is anustiti. Anustiti. Starva deha. Sometimes it's said the impersonalists, they enter into rocks. What is that? Starva deha?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
That's the answer. What's the question?
The question is pertaining to bhakti. Now the times are changing. So do we have to, be rigid in the performance of bhakti?
The times are changing, therefore should we be rigid in our practice of bhakti?
Yeah, so can we also do,
a little bit of compromise here and there. Well, Krishna is not changing. Bhakti is centered on Krishna. The times are changing, but Krishna is not changing. So the definition of bhakti does not change. According to the time, Krishna gives different opportunities. In Kali Yuga, Krishna gives the opportunity for chanting the name of Krishna. In other times, one could achieve perfection by meditation or sacrifices or deity worship. But in this time in Kali Yuga, we chant the names of Krishna. That is the dispensation for this age, to chant the names of Krishna. The time is changing, but the scientific laws of nature stay the same. So according to the laws of nature, if we mix, for instance, acid with alkali, then there's a reaction and salt and water are produced. So it doesn't, because people nowadays think that homosexual relationships are very nice, it doesn't make any difference. Acid and alkali still reacts to make salt and water. So the same thing, there are the laws of nature in the subtle realm also, not only in the chemical or biological realm. There are certain activities which are called sinful, certain activities that are called pious, and according to our activities we get the result. So if we think the time is changing, so I will have a homosexual relationship and still go to Krishna, it's not going to work. Because it's sinful. That's just to give an example. There are so many things, so many ways it could be said. You didn't find that? Oh yeah, this is Ramananda Samvad. Yeah. Jaiche Anustiti. Yeah. That I said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the impersonalists, they can become stones. Stavadeha. How does Prabhupada translate that? Trees, yeah. Stones, trees. Then. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's what?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's
parshads.
They will take bath in Western countries to spread this bhakti rasa.
It's not much. Well, Prabhupada did once say that all my disciples were associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is there. Prabhupada said that. Although in one sense, I guess everyone's an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada said once that he said that we were among his disciples, most of whom were from the West at that time. Prabhupada said that you are all devotees in your last life. And then one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples asked Srila Prabhupada, Baba Ananda asked, well, how could that be? Because we are engaged in so many sinful activities. And Prabhupada said, well, that was just superficial. And the evidence of that is that as soon as you came in contact with devotional service, you all came running. Who knows? Krishna knows. Whatever we were in the past, what we're doing in the present is more important. Someone may go to an astrologer and they say, well, in your last life you were a great devotee, you were a this, that. Well, what? Okay, but what about now? You can't just say, I was a great devotee in my last life. What about this life? There's no use to go to an astrologer and see, what were you doing in your last life? This life, what we're doing now, that's important. If you go to an astrologer, they'll all tell you, in your last life you were a king. They'll never tell you that you were a barber. They never tell that. Always you were a king, you were a very rich man. They'll always tell you that. They're always just flattering. In your last life you were a siddha yogi. If you're a siddha yogi, what are you doing being a working in an LIC office in Hyderabad. How did you end up there? So, you know, don't worry about these things. Okay, so? Yeah.
Mara, being a spiritual guru, collecting a lot of money and servicing like establishing hospitals and educational institutions, is it a proper way?
Being a spiritual guru, is it good to open hospitals and educational institutions? Hospitals, that's not the job of spiritually minded people. But educational institutions for teaching Krishna consciousness? Yeah. For teaching engineering and chemistry, that's not the job of gurus. But to teach about Shastra, Krishna consciousness, yes. That should be there. So, Hare Krishna.